Welcome back to the podcast. Today I have with me Suyash. Suyash, thanks for taking some time and talking with me.
A what it do?
What did you do, what have you been up to? You're back in College Station right now, right?
Yeah, so spent a good amount of time over break back at home, and so I recently graduated on the 18th, and
Yeah,
so then
congrats.
yeah, thanks, man. And so after graduation, I went back to Houston, and was with family for a while, went on a little camping trip, and then I'm back in College Station. I'm working full time now, and so ready for that grind to begin.
Oh yeah. You said camping trip. Where'd you go?
Yeah, we went to Paladuro Canyon over in Canyon, Texas, by Amarillo.
I saw that. That was really nice. I also went too, but I think you guys stayed for like a couple days longer than we did. And you guys actually camped in the canyon too, right?
Yeah, we like went all the way to the bottom, and we had like a campsite thing set up, and it was pretty freaking cold. It was like 20 something degrees at night. We were freezing our butts off, but honestly, it was really fun to just be with, a lot of friends from high school that I haven't seen in a while. And we took all the COVID precautions as well, but it was just really fun to, be with that crowd and do that before next chapter of my life starts.
Oh yeah. I think you might relate to this 'cause when I first went to Palo Duro, like we were driving up and everywhere you drive in Texas is super flat and there's not much going on. And so before we had even seen the canyon, I was like, all right, like I heard this is a nice place to be and hike, but like how nice could it really be? And then you get there and you're like, this is like there's multiple levels to this canyon. Like it goes pretty deep, I feel. It's a really nice place.
Yes, I was like, what the heck? 'Cause you're like driving and the GPS says you're like 20, 30 minutes away and it's just flat. Like there's nothing to be seen except for cows, some corn. And then you pull into like the visitor center part and you just see this massive like hole in the ground. And you're like, what the heck? Like where did this come from? And it was a sight to be seen. I was like, wow, like this is huge. I didn't expect this for a Texas state park, and I was it exceeded my expectations by a lot.
And I think there's multiple areas like you drive around to get like down in the canyon, and it's just so cool. I don't know, just driving through those slopes and you look out and it's just all like open and vast, like landscape.
Yeah. And so we got to go drive all around the canyon. We hiked a lot. Pretty much all we did during the day was put some shorts on and go hike. And if we got bored of the trail, we'd carve our own trail. And we ended up climbing this like cliff face, and we were literally using our arms and legs to climb. And I was in the middle of the group, and actually, funny story, this big boulder gets like slipped out of my friend's foot and it's falling, and I see it right above me. And I use my hand, and unfortunately, I was wearing my Aggie ring. I use my hand to block the boulder, and my ring just slips off, and I hear a big dink. And I'm like, oh no, like it is over. I've lost my ring. Like, what am I gonna do? And I spent like 10 minutes trying to find it. Me and like two other people were on this like cliff face, and we were trying to find it. And out of all odds, like 10 minutes later, one of my buddies goes to UT or TU, and he unfortunately was the one to find it. And so that was just a little good Texas rivalry, bonding there. Aggie loses his ring, the Longhorn finds it. It's the ultimate story.
Was your ring damaged in any way, or was it fine?
Nah, it was fine. It was a little dirty, but I'm gonna go to get take it to get polished anyway, so it'll be fine.
That's really nice. I feel like though, at least camping, and it gets really cold up there too. You don't realize how important it is to have padding on the ground and not be sleeping, just a sleeping bag and that's it, because the ground gets really cold at night.
Yeah, I definitely just slept on the ground. I didn't bring any padding. But nah, it wasn't too bad. The ground was cold. I wore like four or five layers of pants and like upper body stuff too, so we were good. And, yeah, it wasn't too bad. It could have been colder, but now that I like really am thinking back to like 2 weeks ago, it was pretty darn cold.
Yeah. Well, so you talked about, this new chapter of your life. Like, are you just working in College Station now, full time?
Yes, and so my undergrad major was public health, and I'll kind of go through this little story. I like to tell it, but back 8 months ago when the pandemic first started, I had like cold emailed one of my professors, and I'm really tight with her. We did a CASPR, which is this community assessment for public health response down in Rockport freshman year. And so me and her and alongside two other public health students, we like drove down there. And so we got to get really close and talk about a lot of like public health things and just interests. And she's one of my favorite professors, but I cold emailed her back in March. And basically I got an email back a few weeks later, and I was just, you know, the pandemic's happening. As a public health major, I wanted to get in, seek any opportunities there are to help out with the pandemic, that kind of stuff. And she came back with a really cool opportunity to help set up a contact tracing effort at Texas A&M and in Brazos County, which is the county we are here in, Texas A&M College Station, Bryan. And so I basically spent maybe like a month and a half at first just volunteering at the health department. And we started in this closet. And basically, I had a computer, a closet, a phone, a piece of paper that had all the information on it. And we started doing this contact tracing thing. And so basically, we investigate all the cases of positive COVID-19 in our community. And then we'll collect information on close contacts, anyone they might have been within 6 feet of each other more than 15 minutes with or without a mask. And then we'll basically call those contacts and advise them to quarantine. And this is just one way that we can reduce the spread of COVID-19 in our community, in the whole state of Texas, and then ultimately the whole world as well. And so it was a really cool opportunity. I ended up getting onboarded, and then now it's kind of a job that I did throughout the fall semester and the summer. And now I'll be working full time doing contact tracing, not too much of that, but a lot more of the case investigations, and then also working pretty comprehensively with the testing team at Texas A&M. And so I'll be overseeing multiple testing sites around campus, including the rec. They're doing some tents over by Zachary, and so maybe I'll end up seeing you over there. But yeah, so it's a really comprehensive program, but it's everything A&M, every asset they can put into stopping COVID and making sure that their students are safe. It's an honor to be a part of that.
Yeah, and that's crazy that all of that stemmed from you just cold emailing her like that one time, you know?
Yeah, and it's honestly something, you know, I always read people on LinkedIn. They always like brag about how they like cold emailed somebody and something like happened out of it. But I think it's just something that, you know, nothing wrong is going to happen if you don't try. And so.
Did you know that whenever this became like something you did this like over the summer, that it would lead into like what you did in the fall, and like now you're with them full time? Like, did you think that would happen?
I think at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, no one expected this to go as long as it's going right now. And oh man, I know like when I first started, I was like, yeah, you know, this is a great job. I'll have it for the summer, maybe into the fall, and that's that. But I think we've all just seen the effects that COVID has had on our community. The skyrocket of the number of cases and the number of deaths that is happening in not only just the state of Texas, but the whole United States right now. And so I didn't expect it at the time, but I know now they've extended a lot of our contracts and a lot of our grants, and we're fortunate to have this job through, as of right now, I think the end of the year, and they might extend it even further than that, depending on the course COVID takes in these next coming months.
No, that's awesome. I actually did want to ask you, so you graduated with bachelor's in public health. So, What made you like want to go into public health?
Yeah, so I basically started in high school. I grew up being very like STEM oriented. My whole family is pretty much engineers. And so going into high school, I took a class called health science and really became involved in HOSA, which is this it's basically like a high school organization for people interested in the medical professions. And I got really involved in that, and I ended up getting on leadership, becoming the president of my school's chapter, and then also the area president for HOSA. And I really just love the part about helping other people and giving back to the community that you're surrounded in. And originally, I was pre-med, and so applying to college, I applied to different pre-med and public health programs in Texas and some other schools like Penn State. And I ended up getting into A&M. I got public health. I got into honors, and I was still pre-med my freshman year, and then into sophomore year when I really realized that public health is a whole different field, and there's actually so many different careers you can do as a public health professional. I got to exploring that, took some of my upper level classes, and decided that I think public health is the career I want to do. When you're a doctor, you know, you're treating one patient at a time, but when you're a public health professional, you're treating thousands of people, and you're preventing, you're preventing illness, you're preventing accidents, and you're creating a healthier community for you and your kids to grow up in. And I want to be a part of that, and I want to be able to, you know, solve the world's problems in terms of, you know, COVID-19 this year, but also maybe plan and create healthy communities for us to live in and be better human beings and better people too, you know.
So whenever you kind of were narrowing down like, okay, this is like the route I want to go, you talked about taking some upper level classes that I guess help clarify that, but did you have any professional opportunities that made you think like, this is what I want to do?
Kind of, yeah. I got to volunteer a lot in different areas of public health and got to hear a lot from different guest speakers that work in the field. And I think most of that I can attribute to is probably from the guest speakers. But going to the health department, going to different like hospitals or like hospital entities, like clinics and stuff, I think that really showed me that there is like this other side of medicine that's very novel, that's very new in terms of public health being like a very new field. Not many people think about that, you know. The analogy I like to give is you have a patient that comes into the ER with maybe like a heart condition or obesity or something like that, right? What are the different things that could have prevented that? And that's what the field of public health is. How can you create this like healthy community of people, work on, you know, community health and population health, as well as health promotion to kind of get people to live healthier lives.
That makes sense because I don't know, whenever I think of anything health or medicine related, it's always I think about doctors and nurses, and I have friends who are public health majors too, and even now I'm still learning about like what that is and what people can do. But I guess when you're applying to different colleges around I guess Texas and other places too, it wasn't just public health you were like applying to, right? It was like maybe biochemistry or like biology and that type of stuff.
Yeah, so for A&M and UT, I know for sure I applied for public health, and then A&M's public health program was a little more appealing to me at the time. But for some of those other schools, Penn State had like a pre-med program. Same with Baylor. I think Baylor, I was like biology with like a pre-med track. And I'd gotten into those schools. But I think, you know, you don't have like that leeway or that safety net. You know, what happens when halfway through your career you end up not deciding to be a doctor or something, right? And so I think public health, I knew going in from my college visit that they told me there's like a lot of different options. You don't even have to be a doctor. You can go into like the allied health professions, be like a nurse, PA, vet. You can be a epidemiologist, which is a lot of the people I work with now. You can do environmental health. All like the possibilities are really endless. And so, if there's anybody listening on the podcast interested in public health,
Definitely hit him up.
know that you have a lot of job security.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about this, but as tragic as it has been to have like this whole pandemic situation going on, I think it is really cool that in spite of the situation, you're able to make the most of it and learn and honestly see a lot of behind the scenes stuff with A&M and with all the testing that like most people, like we don't even see it. We just show up and get tested and that's really it. But it doesn't just stop there for you.
Yeah, and I think I seek every opportunity that comes to me to, you know, hop on and be a part of the change, whether that's this pandemic or like a change within myself. And so I think it's really funny when I was in January, when 2020 started, I had like tweeted, or like I posted on Instagram, that's what it was. I posted on Instagram a picture and I was like, let this year be full of a lot of like discomfort and challenge, but let us like reap those blessings in disguise. Yeah. And I think I definitely hit the nail on the head in terms of us living through a challenge, but reaping those benefits. And like, this year has taught me so much. And I know for a lot of my friends, there's been a lot of different stuff they've gotten out of it. And at the end of the day, this year sucked, but I think there's a lot of those hidden blessings that we've got to experience.
Yeah. What are some of those like hidden blessings you feel like this year brought for you?
I think to start, I think it's just spending time and like really taking out the negatives in my life and spending more time with family and that kind of stuff. And, you know, we as like people live very fast lives and we're always like trying to pursue the next big thing or in school or at work and we don't have time to relax. We don't have time to like find our true selves. And I think that when the pandemic started in March, we all like stopped what we were doing and we had to figure out what we were going to do with our true selves and with all this time that we had.
Right.
And I got to just, you know, explore a lot of different things. And there's a point where I was like, what the heck, when is this going to end?
Right.
But I think I turned that into, let me try to do something new every single day. And with that, I just started doing all this different stuff, stuff I wouldn't usually do on like an everyday basis. And I found out a lot about myself. Like I'm really bad at disc golf. but I also found out that I really enjoyed biking and I'll like put my music in, just go on these long bike rides up to like 10, 20 miles sometimes. And then also just like, there were so many resources online for like different classes and different like apps and stuff going on. And so I'd just like download different apps, check them out, get into like working out, like without like equipment, like, all that different stuff, like calisthenic workouts. And, yeah, it was just like a big time for discovery for me is really what 2020 was, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think for all of us too, like you got to adjust like socially, obviously. You don't just run into people on campus. That was like a big change for me. All the gyms closing, you got to be creative. Like I still want to be active, but like I don't really have access to equipment. So a lot of areas of adjustment for me as well. But I think in the end, it's definitely like I grew a lot since the beginning of 2020, which I guess is a good takeaway from the year.
Yeah, I think everyone grew a lot. And one thing I was like really trying to struggle with was uncertainty. And I think we all kind of have that struggle of not knowing what is in our near future or not knowing what this day is to come with. But I think we grew a lot to be able to overcome that uncertainty. And I think that's like a really good skill to have, at least for the rest of our lives. We'll be able to fill in those holes.
Yeah, no, definitely agree. I wanted to ask you about your involvement with SGA, the Student Government Association, because I know they do like a lot for A&M, but I don't actually think I've ever gotten to like sit down with someone who's been, I guess, an active participant with it. So you could just break down what you guys did, what like SGA even does, and kind of your positions in it.
Yeah, for sure. SGA, for those of you who do not know what that is just the Student Government Association. At Texas A&M, it's split up in a very interesting way, but it functions really well. There is essentially, your executive, legislative, and judicial branch. The executive branch is led by the student body president and his cabinet, and then the legislative branch, which is consisting of the student senate, and then the judicial branch is consisting of J Court, which is just the judicial court. Aside from that, SGA also has different commissions and committees. Some that you might be familiar with are Big Event. That's a SGA committee, along with the freshman leadership organization Fish Aids, which is what I was in. And then some commissions you might be familiar with. So there's like the legislative commission, which is called Legislative Relations, and they basically have like a student group that goes to Austin during the session, and they advocate for different legislative, legislative related things that happen on a college level to our senators and representatives in Austin. And there's various different types of commissions, like the Diversity Commission. Those basically kind of try to enhance life at Texas A&M. But with my experience in student government, I actually was in Fish Aids, which is the flow I mentioned. And every single freshman is actually assigned a committee that they pref. And so I got Student Senate, and that's kind of where my Student Senate career really kick-started. And you get to see kind of that behind-the-scenes aspect of SGA. And then after your first year is over, you have the option to continue in it. And so that spring, I decided to run for office and got enough votes to guarantee me a spot, a seat in the floor. And so basically was a senator from that day on. And then I finished my career last May when we had our last meeting for Senate.
Did you always know you wanted to get into student government? I'm not too sure, the overlap between that and public health.
I was never in like student council or anything in high school, but I was like in leadership, and when I was looking for flows, I really thought that Fish Aids was really interesting and really unique as well because they have that SGA connection. And so I just kind of did it to, do something fun, and I enjoy leadership in that aspect, and I thought that would be fun. And so, here I am, a few years later looking back on it, and I couldn't say anything more than it was a great experience, and I'd recommend it for anyone.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then you talked about flows, and I just remember this email coming out of this new flow being started. I think it was sent out like soft, like not soft, fresh, like our freshman year, like spring. And I remember seeing your name on there. I didn't know who you were at that point, but tell me what it was like kind of starting an organization from the ground up, because like for me, I could not imagine myself doing that. It's a lot of work. I feel like it's really scary too. There's a lot of unknown. But tell me how that whole experience was for you.
Oh yes, good old Feast. Yeah, so Feast was kind of like one of my babies. I spent so much time my sophomore year in that organization. Basically, it started out with when I was in Fish Aids, I loved the structure of the organization. I loved that it was led by like upperclassmen and that it was basically developing people into leaders, specifically in student government. And I was very fortunate to go to a guest speaker by the name of Frank Cox that came to Fish Aids meeting and spoke to us. Frank Cox was a former Yale leader back in the 60s, and he's probably one of the most red-ass people, but also one of the most like caring individuals I've ever met. And from that day, I just remember being super like spirited, red-ass, like literally, like I almost cried when we went to pull out day and had to whoop. Like it was awesome. Like I just became super involved, loved the Aggie spirit, and I wanted to find a way to offer that love and spirit to other people, especially freshmen, because if there's one thing you can do at Texas A&M is teach freshmen something and let that grow inside of them for 4 years, and by the time they're a senior, they're professionals at it, right? And so, founded an organization with two other people. One of them was also a fish aid, and then one of them was one of my friend's roommates. And we basically met at Lane's, of all places, right? This red-ass restaurant at the College Station. Plug. But we met there, and then we just started to get the ball rolling. And, you know, it came with a lot of struggle. It came with a lot of time. But at the end of the day, I think I learned so much from the organization, and I think I'm just a better person because of it.
Yeah. So when you guys started the organization, you as like a sophomore, were you guys like the oldest people in there?
Yeah. So it was only, whenever we started it, it was only sophomores and freshmen. The staff was of course sophomores, and then the incoming freshmen, were the kind of like the participants in the organization. I remember the very first informational we had, three people showed up, and I was like pretty upset, you know. Nobody showed up to the organization we've spent months on,
right?
And then the next informational, the room was packed. There were like 80 to 90 people there. We ended up getting 170 applications and narrowed it down to 48 freshmen, and it was awesome. It was it was just awesome to see people were actually interested. And so Feast is a freshman exemplifying Aggie spirit together. It's a freshman leadership organization. This year I think it consists of 64 freshmen. And I'm no longer really involved anymore. just because I've also graduated, but it's still going, it's still growing. There's always room to improve. But they're doing a lot of really great stuff with COVID. I know I saw a lot of them volunteered at, I think, Habitat for Humanity and some other organizations, but they do a lot with tradition. So if you come from fish camp and you love the Aggie spirit, you know, Feast might be for you. They do a lot of service, and then they do a lot of social stuff. And we really try to embody the 12th man in that organization.
Yeah, I think it's super cool that, like, obviously you started the organization, but to see it keep prospering as you leave must be like one of the most rewarding things ever, because it's like it's continuing and you don't even have to like be there to like do everything that you once did when you first started it.
Legacy. It's all about, you know, what you're going to leave behind and what other people are going to look up to you for. And I think something specific that I really like between Feast and also like SGA and stuff is both of those provided me the opportunity to leave back a really important piece of information that was lacking. And that legacy, like in Feast, as we started like a sports pass scholarship, which is something that wasn't really offered anywhere. And it's in a lot of different stages right now, but like being able to give students that want to go to sporting events the opportunity to go, that's kind of like one of the missions that Feast had. Another legacy piece that I like to brag about is that moped parking lot on West Campus. I'm of course a moped user. Drive it all around town. You can catch me anywhere on my white moped. But I know everyone struggles with finding parking, but that was like another one of my like babies this year was advocating with transportation services, the campus master planner and the architect on working on the long-term design of Texas A&M. Where can we put more moped spots and motorcycle parking in different parts of campus that it's not like an obstruction, you know? And so we got that big moped parking lot built on West Campus by Wayner, and everybody is always like, thank you.
That is cool. And I feel like you have like this unique perspective on things when you were involved with like SGA and Feast, because I don't know, it's like you're like you have a double life. I don't know, you see both sides of things, and you have like obviously the student side of things, and then you have like the the side where you can actually make tangible change and you get feedback from the people around you. I think that's such a cool like perspective that you've been able to have, because most people are just, we're on the student side and we're just like, oh, we want this to happen, we want this, but then you're also advocating for different changes. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, thank you so much. It really means a lot. And I think, you know, as a recent graduate of Texas A&M, I think it means a lot that like people still there. I know I was there just a few months ago, but this is stuff that will impact students for years to come. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be cool to come back to visit like at our like 5-10 year reunion mm-hmm. and see some of that work still there. So mm-hmm. yeah, it means a lot.
So I had mentioned in Drew's podcast that I had found you on Instagram, like back in freshman year or something. I don't even know how it just came up somewhere. And ever since then, I've always seen you as like, this guy is probably one of the most red ass people I know. He loves A&M. Like that's so clear. Obviously like everything you've done for it. Was A&M like a college you knew you wanted to come to like right from the start? I know you had mentioned something about like the public health department being like an attractive option for you, but did you know you wanted to come here?
No, I don't know. My like high school college search was like pretty interesting because I'm actually from Erie, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Erie, the 814. Mm-hmm. And I lived there for 14 years. And then in the middle of my freshman year of high school, I actually moved to Houston. Mm-hmm. And so that move was like really tough on me, but like I ended up really liking Texas. And now that I'm at A&M, I ended up really liking Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. But I like applied to Penn State, and all my like friends growing up in Pennsylvania ended up going to like Penn State.
Yeah.
And so we were actually all going to like go there, room together, you know, like, you know, come back and all that. Mm-hmm. But I think Texas A&M just ended up being such a good option because, one, like, the program was really good. Two, I got into honors, and, like, a lot of my AP credits and dual credits would transfer mm-hmm. for Texas schools, so that was, like, a plus. UT was, like, up there, too, and I ended up touring Texas A&M, and I just really loved the campus. Actually, when I was on my campus tour, the last stop we did was like the E. King Gill statue. Mm-hmm. And right after we did like all the yells they make you do, the tour guide ended up like, you know, shedding some tears and like really going into this big emotional speech because it was her last tour ever. And then I was like, dang, like I like really felt some kind of connection that mm-hmm. I wanted to go to Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 4 years later, here I am, graduated, and I actually ended up getting a job as a tour guide, and I worked that for all of my college career, too. Mm. So it was pretty sad that my last tour was over Zoom. And so I wasn't as sentimental as she was. If it was in person, I think I might have been, but...
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah, I feel like me, too. You don't come to A&M knowing, like, the impact it's going to have on you or how much you're going to like love it. But I think for me, like whenever I had left campus my freshman year fall for winter break and I came back, I didn't realize how much I loved A&M until I came back and I saw Kyle Field on the horizons. And I was thinking to myself, wow, this is a good life. This is home. I don't know. And even now I love this place so much. I know for a fact I'm going to be one of those parents who, I'm not going to make their kids come here, but I'm definitely going to be like, hey, A&M's a pretty good option too.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I'm excited. I'm going to already have like the A&M like baby clothes thing ready. Like I'm totally going to take pictures of my kids on campus. Like mm-hmm. this is where I spent most of my time. Mm-hmm. This is where I tripped on the Heldenfeld stairs, like all of that stuff. So mm-hmm. A&M's a really cool place, and mm-hmm. you know, I'm definitely going to miss it, but I'm definitely going to be back too. And mm-hmm. I think I have a unique opportunity as a class agent that I get to continue serving Texas A&M for the next 5 years. And then if I renew my term, I can essentially serve Texas A&M for the rest of my life if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me how that works actually, like post-graduation, like you're a class agent. How does that work out?
Yeah, so basically at the Association of Former Students, they have the Leadership Council. And as a class agent, we had to run for the position. So back last March, or more like February, we basically just had to like campaign, get enough votes, and the top five people ended up getting class agent. Mm-hmm. And so it's a team of five of us, and we're basically the official representatives of the class after graduation.
Yeah.
And so then twice a year, there's different leadership council meetings where you kind of gather all the information that you obtain from your constituents, so the class of 21 in our case, AWUP. And basically, you'll bring that to leadership council, you'll advocate for different things. You're a voting member for the association, super cool stuff. And also, like, there's a social component to it as well. And you get to network with a lot of really cool people that go to Texas A&M, went to Texas A&M, or have some kind of, their honorary Aggie or anything like that. But you get to meet a lot of cool people, talk about your love for A&M, and it's just such a cool opportunity to be a part of.
Who's like, or like, who's like the oldest person you've been able to meet like through this position?
Ooh. I think the oldest person I might have met was John J. Coldis. And so he's the namesake for the Coldis building where we spent a lot of time before COVID. And so we got to meet him at his retirement home. And I think just a few months after he passed away, which was super sad, but he had talked a lot about just A&M and student life. And then also I met the founder of PhishAIDS, which he's not that old, but it's going to be interesting, like, if I ever return, like, 30 or 40 years after founding Feast to be that guy, because I think I know what it feels like now.
I mean, even now, you're not that far removed from starting Feast, but I feel like, I don't know, you just, as a freshman, you're wide-eyed about everything, and you join this organization, and the guy who started it, even though they're like 3, 4 years older than you, you're just like, wow, so knowledgeable. Like, look at this guy.
I know. I hate that low key, but it's fine. It's kind of funny.
So you mentioned you're a tour guide. Did you have like a favorite place on campus to show, or like a area of campus that I guess people like know of, but I don't know. I guess, do you have to know a lot of these quick facts and whatnot?
Yeah, there's like a whole packet that you basically have to not memorize, but just kind of learn. And every tour guide gives a different tour, really, when it comes to like the content and the quality and like the little like tips and tricks. I think my favorite place would probably be Academic Building or the E. King Gill statue. Academic Building is really cool because the whole building is just a tribute to the Aggie core value of selfless service, to our nation, our community, and then to our school. In terms of that Liberty Bell replica that's in that building, that's tribute to our nation. Then we talk about Big Event, which is a tribute to our community, and then the class gift, which is also like something that I work with for class agent. And so all that stuff is like really cool. And then E. King Gill, that statue is just cool because Kyle Field is behind you, and you get to talk a little bit more about the fun traditions, like the Midnight Yell practice and all of that. So it's such a fun, A&M is like a fun tour to give, I would love to just give tours of A&M for the rest of my life.
Nah, it's, when I first came here, I didn't really go on any like tour guide routes or whatever. I just visited here with my family during like Thanksgiving break because we figured no one's gonna be here
Yeah, like
actually.
most people do actually.
And I remember at first thinking these buildings are like, they're just like, first of all, everything was like pretty spaced out. I didn't realize there's a whole West Campus.
Oh,
And
yes.
secondly, I was just thinking to myself, I wish there was more color. And now I still wish there were more color, but also, I don't know. It's just, I like the feel when I get on campus. I feel like safe. I feel like it's home, obviously. It's huge. It's easy to get like lost in it, which I really like. So it's a really like low-key nice campus.
Yeah, and they're like demolishing or renovating. I think demolishing is too harsh of a word, but they're renovating a lot of those buildings and adding more of like that. It's like a traditional feel, but it's like very modern. Like Zachary is like really modern, like a little too modern. But you look at like the 21st Century Classroom building, which I think they renamed it to something else, but that's like it keeps the elements of like the traditional color scheme with like a modern touch, which I really appreciate.
It's gonna be really interesting, like when we come back in a few years, and I'm sure, like, I feel like they're doing something to the Simpson Drill Field. I think they're planning on making it a lot more trails through it or whatever. At least what I've heard. I could be completely wrong, but I just feel like there's going to be huge, like, landscape architectural type change in the next couple of years. It's going to be weird to come back to that.
Yeah, and so actually when I was in Student Senate, I was really involved in looking at like the master plan for Texas A&M. And so you can actually go online and they publish the master plans, which the last one I looked at was like the 2020 and the 2030 master plans. But you can see every single idea they have for Texas A&M and what changes you can anticipate. And there's some really good stuff. There's a lot of really needed things like parking garages and parking lots, anything parking related. Tons of more dorms, connecting a lot of dorms to make them bigger. Just imagine a campus where there's like 10 hullabaloos, right? Like that's crazy. New buildings, like really sustainable buildings, and another like MSC type thing on West Campus, which is very much needed as well.
Yeah, no. I'm really excited to see how it all goes down. Also, 2030, that sounds weird already.
That sounds so far, but it's literally 9 years away.
Oh, goodness.
Dang.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you too about just I feel like you've been so many places like internationally. You've studied abroad in college, right? A couple times.
Four times.
Four times.
Yes, four times. I was actually gonna go on my fifth one. It wasn't a full like study abroad program, but it was through the study abroad office to Qatar for the student exchange, student leader exchange program is what it's called. But it got canceled because of the Rona.
Where would that been? That would have been Qatar, you said?
Yeah, I would have gone to the Texas A&M campus over in Qatar.
Well, you've had four other experiences. When did you go on each of those, and where have you been?
So my first one was through my like honors living learning community that I was in freshman year for public health. And it was to Vienna, Austria. And then we took a lot of day trips from there to Hungary, to Budapest in Hungary, and then to Bratislava in Slovakia. And then spent most of the time just exploring Austria. We went to different parts of the country. So it was really cool. But that was to do an independent research project that mine was over Smart City Vienne, which is Vienna, Austria's initiative to become the smartest and most sustainable city in the world. And so I did like a, I don't even remember, it was like a 20-page essay about it in a PowerPoint, but it was super cool. And then so that was March of 2018. So that was our freshman year. Immediately that summer after, I actually went to China for about a month or so. And so we were studying the Chinese like healthcare system and different like sociocultural elements of health in China. And so it was really cool to see like the contrast between traditional and Western medicine and also just like, how the socialized medicine and the like government political atmosphere affects like health in that country, which is really interesting to see. You get to see a lot of that with how they responded to COVID as well. But yeah, that was cool. After that, let's see, it was 2019 December. 2019 was just a crazy year for me traveling. But I actually went to India for a wedding, which isn't the study abroad, but I went to India for a wedding and Thanksgiving. And I don't know if you remember, I showed up to like chair orientation week,
Yes, I
and
remember that.
I literally was straight off the plane. Like I got off the plane from India and drove up to College Station, and I was so loopy, like super jet lagged. But literally 2 weeks after that was my third study abroad to Costa Rica. And so we got to study Central American healthcare systems and basically the same kind of stuff we learned in China, but in Central America and Costa Rica. But we got to go to Costa Rica and then Panama, which was super cool. And then my the oh okay so I got back from Costa Rica, right? 2 days later I was on my plane to Israel.
That is crazy.
And so the last official study abroad that I did, which it wasn't through Texas A&M, it was actually through another organization. We went to Israel, and basically they sent about 80 student leaders from different college campuses in America, which I was the only one from Texas A&M, to Israel to kind of, you know, learn about the Middle Eastern, like, climate, learn about, like, cultural, religious, and societal aspects of, you know, Israel, and then also Palestine, and just see, like, what, like, why it's such an important part of the world, that Middle Eastern portion, and, like, the conflict that's going on. And their hopes with that trip was to really, like, inspire these individuals to keep all this stuff in the back of their head, because it's something that's very relevant to all of us, and you don't usually think about it a lot, but it really is.
Right. That's just crazy. I feel like you that's so much, like, I guess, different cultures you get to experience. I feel like I've been abroad a few times, but it's mostly just like vacation, or like my study abroad was only 2 weeks. You've been going to these places like extended periods of time. I guess what place healthcare wise like stuck out to you, in the sense of like, this is something that like we can implement better here in America, or like even locally?
I mean, that's a really loaded question, just because there's a lot of things that I think would help us out a lot. It's just really hard to like get the rest of the country to be on board,
you know? Yeah,
obviously, I mean, this is a hot take, but obviously I don't think like socialized medicine or like socialized healthcare is really gonna work because of the mindset of so many people. You know, they hear, I think they hear socialism and they don't truly understand what it really is, if I can say that. But I think to some extent, like, there needs to be some kind of expansion of healthcare, and health insurance for people too. And I think just whenever that happens, our country is just going to be a lot healthier in general. But I think all of the countries that I've gone to and kind of explored their healthcare systems, they have different aspects that would work and then different aspects that wouldn't work in our countries. So
During your like experiences abroad, did you ever think to yourself like maybe pursuing a full-time role in another country is something I want to do, or you just want to stay in the United States?
Yeah, and so actually the master's programs that I'm looking at right now are all in the fields of international public health or global health or any, something like that. And so I'm hoping I can graduate with my master's, work for a little bit abroad in, I don't know, I think working for like the World Health Organization, if I could land a gig there, something like that would be super cool. But I think Europe has a lot of really cool places that does a lot of cool things in terms of like sustainability and public health and that kind of stuff. And so I'm for sure, if given the opportunity to live and work abroad, I think I would totally take it.
Yeah. And if you could like tell me one specific like landmark or something you saw in each of your study abroad places that you're like, wow, this is incredible, just like for sightseeing purposes, what would they be?
Oh yeah, so my trip to Europe, the first one, I think just Buda Castle in Budapest is like super cool, because you can basically climb to the top and then you can see the whole city from the top. You can see the parliament building, and at night they like light it up and it's like a golden yellow, like it looks like a gold castle.
Yeah,
and it's just so pretty. In China, the Bund in Shanghai is like this French area, and everything is like French architecture, which is like super interesting because it's just in the middle of like China.
Yeah, right?
But the Bund is like this waterfront area in the French part, and basically it's just like a cool skyline, like shot of Shanghai, which is just awesome. And then in Costa Rica, I think, well, so we were in like a very like remote part of the jungle in Costa Rica, but honestly, San Jose is like the capital city. It's super cool. There's this big waterfall called La Fortuna. And then there's also this volcano, which, what is the volcano called? I don't know. But yeah, the the waterfalls in La Fortuna, and then the volcano is called Arenal, and
Okay.
so all of that is like really cool stuff to see in Costa Rica. And then, of course, Israel, like by far the coolest part is just Jerusalem. There is so
Yeah.
much history just captured within the walls of the old city of Jerusalem, and there's some awesome things to do there. And
Yeah.
Tel Aviv is really fun too. It's like a very like fun city. It reminds me of like Austin and Miami if they had like a baby.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I just searched it up. I agree too.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you have anything else on like your bucket list in terms of places you want to hit? I mean, you've hit a lot of really awesome places.
Yeah. I mean, I like love to travel, and I think people always have the misconception that traveling is like really expensive. If you do all the like vacation type things, go to like popular parts, like it can get pretty expensive.
Yeah.
But it's honestly not that bad. You can budget your way through. You can finesse a lot of different things. You can find so much money that you can save for it. Like I'll tell you, for my study abroads, like a lot of like probably 75% of all the study abroads combined were covered by some sort of grant or scholarship. And so like my whole trip to Europe was completely free. Israel was completely free, and then I got like some scholarships and grants to cover most of like Costa Rica and China. And so even for like just traveling, like there's different places where you can like find ways to fund your travels. And then also just find ways to get like cheap flights and like cheap lodging. And I just love doing all of that kind of stuff. And so I've been really thinking about like starting like a website or a blog or something to be able to share like my tips with other people.
Yeah, I think that'd be really helpful because I've always been under the impression of, yeah, like vacationing, road tripping, whatever, it's so expensive, but it's only expensive if, like you said, you do the things that everyone kind of tells you to do, but you don't have to like follow the book, you know. You can kind of like, for example, like camping, right? You don't have to like have the most extravagant food. You like something simple like sandwiches and hot dogs is
Oh yeah.
usually good enough.
Yeah. And so I think the next place on my list, of course, I'm waiting for the pandemic to settle down a little bit. And with the vaccine coming out, it's looking pretty promising. But I'm trying to go back to Europe and do some of the countries I haven't visited. One of my buddies actually lives in Austria, and so me and him were gonna go travel around the country. And then also travel just around the EU and then also to the UK and all that. And so hopefully things can get going. I actually just got the vaccine last week,
Oh,
so
nice.
yeah, it was an interesting
I
experience.
think you're one of the first people, I guess, my age I know who got it.
Yeah, just from working in like the COVID operations center and being in the testing program too, like it's a little risky. And so if we can keep all the people that work at the COVID operations center healthy, then we can do our job better. And so it's kind of why we qualified.
So I got a couple more questions for you. The first one is, I didn't realize that like you're in the process, I guess, of looking for like a master's program while also like doing full time. So like obviously we plan for things in the future. We don't know how it's gonna work out, but like right now, like what do you think's gonna or like what is your like ideal situation to happen this next year?
I think I'm gonna be working full time from now until like June or so. And I think originally before COVID, I was like thinking of completely other things. And I'm very goal oriented and also love to set different short term and long term goals. And if you asked me before COVID, I think I would have told you something different. But for now, the time being, I'm working until about June. And then I'm gonna take some time off to do some stuff for myself and maybe go travel given the opportunity with the rate of COVID in the community. And then I'll be starting my master's program at one of three schools in August. And so it's gonna be between Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, UNC Chapel Hill in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and then Emory University in Atlanta. And so I'm waiting to hear back from Emory on admissions, and then I'm waiting to hear back from all of them on scholarship, but I've gotten into the other two, and so
nice.
We are just on a little waiting game, and eventually we'll have a little more certainty. But
that's exciting. Have you visited Johns Hopkins or UNC Chapel Hill in person yet?
No, none of them are doing visitations or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I might honestly take like a week or two off of work at some point in like February or March. I don't have to decide by April. And so maybe I'll take some time then to go visit and see if they're doing any kind of events or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've like thoroughly researched both schools. I've been in contact with a lot of different students and staff and faculty. Then both schools have been really helpful in terms of answering my questions. And I think it's just up to me in a few weeks to make a final decision. And so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. That's so exciting. I mean, like, you have this, I guess, little break from school. You're still working full time, but you have this little, what, like 8 months of just focus on like your job, worry about like school later. But I don't know. Sounds like you got exciting times ahead of you. I'm really looking forward to seeing like what you do.
Oh yeah, I'm excited, and the work is definitely like good for like, you know, expanding on my public health skills.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, you got to save some money up for these programs, because
exactly.
they're gonna hit the bank pretty hard.
Yep.
But yeah, it's gonna be an exciting next few months, and I'm excited to see what happens. I'm excited to see where you end up too. When are you graduating?
Yeah, I'm graduating spring 22 actually.
Okay.
Because I was originally taking 4.5 just for school, but I'm co-oping actually right now this semester, so it pushes me back to 5 mm-hmm. years. But I got some time, so we'll definitely see. You'll be in your second semester, finishing up your second semester of master's by the time I graduate.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It seems like it's such a long time from now, but
yeah.
I'll tell you, it'll come up real fast.
Honestly, I feel like I've already been feeling like the pressure and all like the expectation of life after undergraduate, because I mean, people in our grade are graduating. Some people have already graduated like last December, like you. So I don't know. It's really interesting. I'm in that weird phase of I've started thinking about life after college, but then I still have over a year and a half left. So like you said, feels like a lot of time, but not really.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And final question, actually. So you've already graduated college. You've done so much while like you were in college. What is like a lesson that you've learned your 3.5 years here that you hope you carry on with you for the rest of, I guess, time?
Ooh, that's such a good question. And I think you can ask like any one of my friends, but they all know that like my motto is seek discomfort. And so if you've watched anything by Yes Theory on YouTube, mm-hmm. they live by this motto, and it's the name of like all of their like marketing and like their brand and stuff. It's seek discomfort. And it basically just says that we shouldn't live our lives every single day in the same routine, in the same bubble. We should always like bring spice to our life. We should always like be seeking the next big thing or getting out of our comfort zones and like truly experiencing this world that we live in. And like, that's something that I watched one of their videos maybe like freshman year of college, and I just really loved it, because the group of the three of them, they just do all this really cool stuff and they get out of their comfort zones, and all of their episodes have like really good meanings and like mottos to them. But throughout college for myself and like my friends, I've always tried to just implement that motto into the back of like everything I do. And so, you know, with the pandemic, I think we've sought the most discomfort we've ever had, you know, getting out of our comfort zones, doing new things. But through traveling, through COVID-19, through school and meeting people, I think I've gotten to seek discomfort, get a little uncomfortable, but become comfortable doing those things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's something that I hope a lot of other people can definitely do.
Yeah, I agree too. I definitely feel like it's through like those uncomfortable moments where you like grow the most, and you might not notice it at first, but in hindsight, like you're gonna realize that it was worth so much. And it could be something as simple as, goodness, gosh, I don't know, but it doesn't like have to be like a huge life-changing like decision that you do to like become uncomfortable. Just even the slightest thing of like going somewhere where you like know no one, joining an organization, you know, doing taking this class, or like even emailing a professor like a cold email, you know, like little stuff like that. You just keep doing that, and I just feel like it adds up in the end.
Yeah, and I think it, you mentioned like the littlest things. I think the human connection is something that is a such a small thing, but we've honestly lost it as a society as everything goes digital and online. But you know, I stand in a line at Panda Express in the MSC, and like everyone's just standing there by themselves on their phone.
Looking
And
down.
my freshman year, I vividly like remember this memory, just like looking up and like tapping someone's shoulder and just saying hi and like introducing myself and making a new friend. So I think that's something that like some people are, you know, not as comfortable doing, but like meeting people, making friends, connecting, like going back to that physical intimacy that we've lost through texting and Snapchatting and Instagram, you know. I think I value that more than anything. And I know you always say I have like a cool Instagram. But more than that, I value like my physical relationships and the people I see every day. And so that's just something that I would love to see more in this world.
No, for sure, yeah. And like I think even like college, obviously the easiest time, like you're around all these people who like are your age. There's definitely like some sort of connection there. Like you guys are all in the same university. I think take advantage of being a like being in close quarters with everyone, even if you aren't physically there. Like you're bound to find someone who's similar to you in some way, or like you're bound to find someone who's going to teach you something that you didn't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that brings us to the end of this podcast. Suyash, thanks so much for being on with me again. I really appreciate it.
For sure. It was a pleasure. Thanks for
Yeah,
having me.
of course. And everyone else listening in, I will see you guys on our next one.